The Honest Wargamer, an honest and independent show run by gamers for gamers. We bring you the latest in critical meta discussions, zany list tech, and deep dive discussions about the hobby as a whole. We are supported by our fantastic patrons and Twitch subscribers. If you'd like to support us and join the team, that would be awesome. Don't forget all you hydro homies, stay hydrated. Now get yourself comfy. Rob is now here for today's episode of Stream Streak.
Hello, welcome to The Honest Wargamer. As you can see, this isn't Rob. Rob is doing something else, probably playing a game of Warhammer, I imagine. I'm your host for today, Scrivo. Thank you to everyone on Patreon and obviously all you guys in Twitch that are subscribing. And obviously, podcast guys, stay hydrated. Don't forget, we do have the handy Honest Wargamer bottles on pre-order. Not that I'm trying to be a corporate shill or anything, but it's my project, so why not? And as you can see, we have a guest today. So this is the wonderful Kieran Gillen. He is the writer of the just released today 40k Marnius Kalgar book that Marvel have released. So I thought it'd be kind of nice to touch base with Kieran and kind of find out what was the deal with that. And obviously, it's hobby related and it's comic related, so it's kind of my thing, really. So how you doing, Kieran? How's it going?
I'm good. I'm just I'm looking at the stream. I'm very excited by my font. As in, you know, I really like your... This is the first thing I do anytime I watch a TV show. It's like, yes. Oh, I like that font. Alternatively, don't
it's
like
it's a horrible font.
And this is definitely a font I like, so thanks for
I hate the font, personally. It doesn't have any extra characters. I'm trying to do the stuff like the podcast titles and stuff, and someone's put a question mark in the title, it doesn't work, and I'm sat there just going, this is upsetting me. But that's just me being the design guy. It just annoys me. So how you doing? How's lockdown been treating you and kind of the change of the norm, as they say?
It's okay. I say this to everybody. I played lockdown on relatively easy mode in that I work from home anyway. I live with a wife and we don't hate each other.
That's strange. So,
we've got we have no dependents. None of my work was cancelled. So on some basal level, like, it's not like life is normal, but there's a bit less disruption than many people. Obviously in the wider sort of state, oh no, it's all apocalyptic and terrible.
But yes.
The worst thing, of course, I've not played Warhammer in all of lockdown. All I've done is paint. So it's pretty sad.
Do you find that your kind of the hobby side of things is slower if you're not knowing you're looking forward to a game, or is that kind of an adjacent thing for you?
Adjacent. I've always come in waves. Yeah. So it's like when I got back into the hobby, like circa 2008, I painted Skaven for like at least 3 years before I decided. I looked at like the hundreds of Skaven I've painted and went, should probably play a game at these at some point. I'm always like, I sort of follow my interest in where I am at the moment.
That's cool. That's a good way to be with it. So, leading into that then, how did you get into the hobby? Was it the traditional, as a kid, dip back out, dip back in type of thing?
Yeah, basically. I mean, I'm of course incredibly old. So, I got into Warhammer when you had to basically write in and get them to send you, like, A3 big sheets of paper with the mumps models attached.
From the trolls. So they really, were actual trolls,
really,
weren't they?
Very old. Yeah. So that was kind of my way in. And if I remember, I ordered like Ravening Hordes the army list for second edition was my first thing I bought from them. So I had no idea the actual rest of the rules. So I was trying to work out what the rest of the rules were just from the army list. But then I was there when 40K came out, and I've sort of like dropped in and out depending upon where I've been at any point. So like, I probably dropped when I went to university. I dropped out. So like, I got back into it circa 2003, when me and Jim Rosignol, who I write a book called Ludocrats with, we both kind of got back into it hard. I painted a Necron army. Then I got back into 2008, and sort of basically continued in some form ever since.
Yeah, once it gets its tendrils into you, it never seems to leave you again. It's like, I did that whole thing of going to the pub and thinking, yeah, I've grown out of that stuff now. I'm going to be a social person. I'm going to go and do some comic stuff. It'll be fine. And then it's always there in the corner. You look at those boxes and go, I'm not going to sell them. Not just yet. And then it gets you again.
It's waiting for you. I must admit, I spent a lot of my 20s, like, in a similar way to you. But I got hit 30 and you end up just going, I don't care anymore.
That's how I spent my 30th birthday.
I'm going to return. I'm very happy. Sorry, it's the only thing that stops me accessing the internet, this painting. It's absolutely meditative for me. So it's something I find, as opposed to assembling miniatures, which I'm terrible at and always makes me angry. But painting is soothing.
And it's nice to have something that's not digital, right? So you're kind of then a bit more detached. And especially, I can imagine for you, you're sat there writing all day at a desk. To be able to go and sit at a different desk or the same desk, but just doing something different that isn't a screen is probably a nice change, right?
Yeah. It's like kind of like just anything. It's just the separation of it, I guess. And I've definitely got the problem where everything eventually becomes work. I mean, there's an irony here that I found a way to make Warhammer work now.
You're talking to me right now. I work in a toy shop selling the stuff, and then in my evenings I go, I'm not going to paint my own stuff. I'm going to talk about people painting their stuff instead. It's just, it just gets you. So when I was looking through your kind of, your bibliography, kind of seeing what your kind of the greatest hits, obviously you're quite well known for some of the big things that you worked on, Thor, Uncanny X-Men, indie titles like Phonogram and The Wicked and the Divine. But I looked at it, and one of your first kind of paid gigs specifically as a comic writer was for Black Library's Warhammer Monthly. I think it was issue 74, if my memory's right.
Yeah,
does that feel like it's kind of now kind of you've looped around and you're back to where you started, but kind of with a different take on it?
There's a little bit. I mean, there's kind of like, how to phrase it. I mean, that was literally my first work for hire gig. I forget if I'd done like an editorial cartoon before or after, but like I wasn't aware of Warhammer Monthly existing, because that was the end of my not into Warhammer period again. As an overdue comics do though, and it's like I want to write comics and I know about Warhammer and these two things can come together.
Fantastic.
So I did a couple of comics for them, and then the Warhammer Monthly closed down. So that was kind of like, obviously they knew they could never ever beat those two strips.
Yes.
So they had to back out of it. But it's sort of like, that taught me a lot, you know, in terms of writing for the deadline, writing in the format, and coming back to it X amount of times in a very different place. I think the interesting thing is the fact in 2008, when I went to work after Phonogram, which was my indie book, I did a mini series for Boom called Crown of Destruction. And that was my first American comic, my first American work for hire comic. So at both of those stages, basically, as I was entering a new stage in my career, I sort of used Warhammer as this sort of test bed for it. Like literally the Crown of Destruction I describe as, can I write an action comic? And it's me literally being paid a page rate to go, okay, how does punching work?
You know? That was the old world, wasn't it, as well, specifically?
Yeah, that was old. It was basically Empire versus Skaven with some undead stuff in the mix. And as you say, now I'm in this position where like I have done a lot of comics and I know the medium back to front, and I can bring a different set of skills to bear, as in because of like I know what I'm doing in a way which I, you know, was learning to before. So it's kind of like I can go, okay, how should a 40k comic work? What can we do which is not even seen regularly in comics that really sells what's interesting about 40k? So it's stuff like putting aside the basic fact my storytelling's better, and putting aside the fact that I know how to deal with licensees and editors better, so I can get more of an idea of how to get ideas onto the paper.
Right.
There's also stuff like there's a load of data pages in like we use data pages in Melanius Calgar. So it's okay, let's make it feel a little bit like the manuals. Let's do some of the world building. It's like a single panel, and we can sort of explain some hard concepts, give some context, then go back into the story. So really trying to make it feel like, I mean, there's been so many really great Warhammer comics in the past, but the idea of we can bring a slightly different skill set to bear with the backup of something as big as Marvel. So that's kind of what those two things are doing.
So kind of touching on that, you were one of the writers in the initial wave of the newish, this was sort of 5 years ago, Marvel got the license for doing Star Wars comics. You launched their Darth Vader comic. So has that kind of set you up with kind of the good tools for how to approach a launch, but also an intellectual property being kind of treated with not necessarily kid gloves, but the respect and knowing how to kind of balance what you want to achieve without constantly having that sort of pushback, perhaps?
It's always one of those really I mean, just somewhat, in some ways, you get it a little bit with Marvel. Like, even, like, you know, I've written, like, the Marvel Universe. I've written the big heroes like Iron Man and, you know, Uncanny Uncanny Avengers. That's not the book. Uncanny X-Men. And, all manner of...
There we go.
So I've... thank you very much. What we've got is... With the Marvel Universe, it is the leading bit of the IP, is the best way of putting it. And I hate using the word IP. But, you know, the idea that the comics are, in fact, despite the movies being bigger, the comics are also are doing their own thing and pressing forward. Conversely, with Star Wars, is the thing was a secondary piece of work.
Yes.
You know, as in, the, clearly, the you know, it's all one canon, but the movies are the thing which is the driving force. And you are kind of like moving out. And the way I described doing the Star Wars stuff was like writing historical fiction. So, like, you know, the, you know, like, my Darth Vader run started at the end of A New Hope, ends somewhere near the beginning of Empire. So I'm basically looking at that period and thinking, okay, what logically can happen here?
So you're filling in the gaps very much.
Yeah. It's like also not filling in the gaps, but what is emotionally interesting here? So it's kind of like, if nothing was interesting happening, I would have turned down the gig. Mm. But in the case of Star Wars, it's like, you know, Vader discovers that he has a kid. That's one thing.
And fine, you know, having that kind of... filling in the details of these kind of key points that never have been explored, I suppose, and it's kind of pulling on those threads.
Yeah. Me as a fan, like, me, you know, me as a fan and a creator, just think, okay, what do I want to know? You know what I mean? As opposed to what's extraneous and what do I want to know? And also in the case of, like, Star Wars, it's like, both me and Jason, who was the other writer on the first wave of books, the key thing for us to make it feel like Star Wars. Because since the movie was the quote-unquote real core experience... we didn't do stuff like narrative captions. We didn't do you know, various like Kirby-esque subjective storytelling techniques. We just didn't use because they weren't part of the visual language of Star Wars.
Stylistically needed to match the films and feel at home in that kind of universe per se.
Yeah.
In its stylistic choices.
Exactly. Yeah. And the and continuing on to Warhammer is posh. What the choices I've ended up making are very, very different because. The lead part of Warhammer is, of course, the miniatures. It's the miniature game and that. And that, of course, doesn't exist in a... You know, even the novels are, in some ways, a secondary form.
Yeah.
As in, they're basically epiphenomenons, to use the fancy word, of this pure idea of what Warhammer is. So it's kind of, so the question is... So with the Star Wars, it was, let us try to make the comics feel like the movies. This is like, how can you make the games... Sorry, the comics express the underlying virtues of why we play Warhammer and why we love the world and why we're into it. So it's so much like a much more, you've got to make a leap of faith there, a creative leap, as in, okay, how can we make it feel like that? What sort of techniques do we use? And in that case, it's like, I look at my wider skill set. So I'm thinking about Garth Ennis war comics. You know, I'm thinking about Jonathan Hickman storytelling pages. You know what I mean? So how can you kind of hit those kind of... And also, I forgot his name, Martial Law. The guy who wrote Martial Law, Pat Mills.
There
Pat
we go.
Mills, type of satire.
I was googling very slowly.
You know, so those pre-existing trends in comics—they're all very Warhammer. In fact, I would imagine Pat Mills was probably an influence on Warhammer.
Time Rhymes,
And how you get them all to so that how could a Warhammer comic be? So it's kind of that. In some ways, it's so much of my job is being proper. I lie. So much of my job when I am actually doing a work for hire job is. Problem solving, as in, okay, what actually is the job here? What can I do? What do the people who have the franchise want? What are they interested in? What do I want to do? Because if I don't want to do it, I won't do it. And also, what the hell would the audience want to see as well? So all these things are tied together, and you're trying to find something that actually feels like that.
So that kind of leads into one of my other questions, which was obviously you've got the artist Jason Burrows is working on Minus Calgar with you. He's very much got, when I looked at his back catalogue, it's a lot of the stuff with Avatar Press that's kind of Cthulhu, very kind of demonic at times sort of style of thing. So it felt very a natural kind of person to maybe get in for the project. Was that obviously a consideration when kind of looking at how you were approaching it? Because he looks to me as an artist, you look and go, that guy could draw every Chaos God and its followers, and it just would fit.
It's like, he's not somebody who would shy away from gore, is a good word for it. It's one of the ironies that the extra, I mean, if people are watching, they don't know the Avatar books. Avatar is very much primarily an extreme horror line. So, in other words, some of the stuff they've Jason has had to draw is genuinely monstrous in terms of it's meant to horrify.
Cross is not for me, let's put it that way.
There was some quote strong stuff in there, I'll put it. So he's also worked with some of the best storytellers in the business. He's worked with like Garth Ennis and Alan Moore. And so he's used to work writing really detailed scripts and really into world detail. He's one of those people like that Jeff Darrow-esque sense of scale and apocalypse. And the thing about Warhammer is if you have a different art or something, you can do a different side of Warhammer.
Yes.
You know, if you had someone who's a bit more impressionistic, you go more into the kind of Inquisition and horror sort of aspects. And his case is the fact you've got this kind of almost schematic-like clean line. It's almost like if Tintin decided to start murdering people.
Yes, very European in its kind of the approach almost in that traditional sense. Yeah.
So you get the him is like it's all about very clean storytelling. It's all about showing the moment-to-moment violence, and that's kind of what was really. And also, Jason's a friend of mine. He's somebody I've wanted to work with for years. So kind of like, oh yeah, we can finally get together and do our hyper-violent, high dark fantasy space for a comic together. I mean, so that actually reminds me of the other thing. Like my other sort of job is obviously this is the first Warhammer comic, and at least part of the idea for me is, as opposed to coming in and joining a line and doing a book in it, it's like, okay, I'm going to set the basic tone for the line. And when I say tone, I don't necessarily mean like the emotional tone, because there'll be darker books and like, you know, there's all different sorts of tones and the writers all will have to make their own thing. But like how you can do a Warhammer book in the Marvel mode. So stuff like the data pages, stuff like the storytelling devices, it's like, okay, here's how I think a Warhammer comic can work. So this is what me and Jason have cooked up. People can kind of build and make it feel like a coherent body of work, because that's kind of like really part of the appeal. As in the fact we're doing these minis, you know, we're doing a mini and it's a standalone story. Yeah. We always want to have the connections between them as well, in the same way a classic Marvel story works, I guess.
So having those kind of those planet image kind of pages to give context is kind of nice, because obviously a lot of the time in Games Workshop kind of materials, a planet will just be a blob on a map and you go, cool, that's that name of that planet, that's it. So giving that context kind of adds some depth, I suppose, doesn't it?
Thank you. Yeah, it's what as people haven't read the comic yet, that's one of my favourite devices. So we do these 3/4 pages, here's a picture of the planet, here's a brief bio of the planet, you know, occasionally we get a quote for the day sort of
those
thing.
Those horrendous.
I might have said yes to this job just to write quote for the, you know, fought for the days, because it's like, that makes my heart boot. And it's, one of the real joy of that is, as you say, you get a bit of context, but also you get a context of the Warhammer universe. It's like, that one would be described the Agri world. It's like, that's horrible. You know, it's a really horrible description of that world. And you kind of realize, oh yeah, this universe is kind of bad. It's a bad place. I would not like to live there. And that
nasty
kind of way of, the fact that like in comics, you have a limited amount of space of storytelling. You can't linger on some of the details as you might be able to do in prose as much. So like trying to make sure that it all kind of gathers together like that on all those devices.
Yeah. So one big question I had for you. So obviously I'm quite aware of your work. Quite a few of your comics, you've ended up having very much playlists that you then kind of synchronize with your work. That tends to be in a lot of more of your things like your Phonogram, Wicked and the Divine. It kind of lends itself naturally to that. Did you have a playlist for Khalgar of kind of like stuff you listen to?
I've had less of a playlist than I've usually do, but I've quite often put an album on repeat. Like early on when I was writing Warhammer, the Batushka album, Yentaya. I'm reading off the actual device because I can't pronounce that. Which is it's like Eastern Orthodox chants over like thrash metal, and that was kind of like this big droney, messy rock noise.
That sounds grimdark.
And then it was really, honestly, it's so grimdark. You won't believe it. And when I say it's amazing, it's amazing in every single definition of the word. And there was like other bits I was listening to. What are they called? I can't say that. I can't say that they're Blank Mask, who are like I can't say the band's name because it's got swearing in. Can I swear?
Yeah, go for it. We say a lot of swear words on the show, so it's all good.
Oh, great. The spin-off project of Fuck Button. Their noisier side project, Blanked Mass, I believe it's called. I was listening to their stuff, and it's really incredibly loud, aggressive, like monstrous techno. But also at the same time, my final, when I was writing the final issue of the mini, which is basically the big on action rock and roll explosion, I actually just listened to Appetite for Destruction on repeat. Because like I got into Guns N' Roses and like metal as a teenager at the same time as I got into Warhammer.
Yeah.
So I kind of like tapped my inner 13-year-old like rock, Midlands rock kid, and hit it like that. So that was a lot of fun. So Short answer is a lot of metal.
Well, that feels like a logical step, and I was half expecting that, but then at the same time, I was half expecting you to go, I was listening to a lot of, like, Robin or something, because just sidestep the expectation, perhaps, but yeah.
I listen to it, when I'm writing Eternals, I'm listening to a lot of ABBA for some reason. I don't know why. It's like, it's this big, epic, Esad Ribic, enormous space opera, and for some reason it's just come down to ABBA in my head. But that's what I did.
Yeah, well, it's very Kirby costumes, kind of fits in with that kind of time period, I suppose, to some extent.
Yeah. That's my thinking, actually. Yeah.
At least that's an excuse and you can stick to it. So, the next question I had was, Khalgar is quite an established character. I think I counted roughly, I think there's 5 figures they've done. So he's been in the kind of the catalogues throughout the whole of the history of 40k. Why was he your target character? Rather than kind of a new character or any other named character. Why Khalgar?
It's interesting. I mean, like, before we kind of, like, started, like, specifically being Marnius Khalgar, there was, like, conversations, okay, because obviously Marvel, being Americans have less contact with Warhammer than I do. So I'm aware that I've often acted as a translator between Marvel and Games Workshop, as in I speak both languages. but it's like, there's been lots of conversations and that kind of, the sort of comics that, you know, Games Workshop would like to see. You know, that kind of like, these are characters we think might be interesting. And like these, it's not like a short list of Marnius Khalgar, but he was on a big list of people who they think this character might be useful. And especially when I got thinking about the sort of topics to cover, because one of the real sort of key core Warhammer stories is, okay, Space Marines. How do Space Marines get made? Like, we see the Space Marines, okay, how did that guy get to be that guy?
Yeah.
And so, like, that's kind of like the in terms of what the story, quote unquote, does, is an origin story for Space Marine generally, but it's also a story of a Space Marine specifically, as in Marnius himself. So you get to know, like, okay, this is how Space Marines are made, if you're following the book. but you also get how Marnius, who's a very special kind of Space Marine, but he's also like a paragon of being a Space Marine. He's that kind of the weirdness of he's so by the book that he's become unusual,
yes.
Yes. You know what I mean? So, and also the other important thing about Marnius, despite being such an important figure, despite being so many miniatures of him and like, you know, there was a drawing, he was in Rogue Trade, wasn't he?
I think so, because he sat down on the little chair with his fists. Yeah, it's ridiculous, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of, you know what I mean? Like, he's been there all the time, but at the same time, we don't know a huge amount about him. You know what I mean? It's not like, there's a significant blank slate there. So he's a prominent figure, who definitely is useful when talking about whatever Space Marines means, who we could know more about. You know what I mean? And that's a kind of like golden sort of area. I mean, like, looking at the future, like, depending on the minis down the road and what people choose to do, I imagine it'll be a mix of new characters and old characters. And like, you know, they won't all be about the Ultramarines. You know what I mean?
It did seem logical to me, though, because Ultramarines are essentially the poster boys. When you look at most Space Marine kits, if it's not got a Space Marine that's an Ultramarine on the front, on the box, there's something different. It's probably not an Ultramarine Space Marine then, as a whole.
One of the line I've been using in interviews is, you know, the Ultramarines wrote the book, literally. Yeah. The Codex Astartes, they wrote it. So if you're trying to introduce, like, because as well as the book appealing to Warhammer fans, I'm also trying to, like, appeal to people who don't know anything about Warhammer.
Yeah.
So if you're going to explain, like, Warhammer 40k and the Space Marines, you've probably got to start with, this is what a normal Space Marine is like.
Yes.
Because then, like, when the Space Wolves or the Blood Angels turn up, you know why they're cooler.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? As in, what makes them cool is because they're, like, different.
You don't assume that everyone's going to be a chapter where they've got some weird quirk inherently.
Yeah, yeah. You know, like, that, you need that kind of, like, this is what normal is in this utterly bizarre
universe. Bunny is normal.
Then, yeah, exactly. Quotation marks. So then you can orientate yourself. So that's at least part of the reason why you start with the Ultramarines, I think.
Yeah. So if you could then, so you kind of touched on other characters being explored. Is there some character specifically in mind that if you could just, if an editor approached you and said, right, we want you to do a mini series now, who would you bite the hand off to write about?
Honestly, that's a really good question. To be honest, if I was generally given complete free reign, I'd probably make someone up, I think. You know what I mean? Because when I'm actually, you know, this is kind of, you know, I said earlier about my different parts of my brain. Like, the full-on creator, when I'm actually playing Warhammer at home, all my stuff is almost all homebrew. Yeah. I make my own. I always make my own chapters.
You've
and, you know,
that's half so the
I'm
fun,
that kind
right?
of guy. And I, if you gave me a book, I'd probably do a Rogue Trader book with a, so you could have all the weirdos aboard, and you know what I mean. I could get to pick up my favorite Imperial stuff and be able to move around and do cool stuff like that. And also, like, imagine Star Trek, if everyone was awful.
Yeah, or Firefly, but grimdark. It would be so much fun, right?
Exactly, you know what I mean? But I must admit, I've just been reading the new Necron Codex, and there's a lot to love in the Necron Codex in terms of, like, the, you know, the big, the sort of the big figures of the characters. I'm very much feeling the Necrons at the moment.
Because you've got a Necron army pre-paint. That was one of your early kind of jump backs into the hobby, wasn't it, you said?
I did. Was it last year or the year before? I actually stripped my paint job of my Necron from 2003 and redid them all. In fact, I've got a bunch of Necron I've still got to paint, which is one of my next projects.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like a nice, fun project to do as well, because with all the nice new bits, you've got kind of stuff to encourage and tempt you on, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm considering. They're painting them in Soundtech, and I'm actually considering moving over to the Silent King sort of colour scheme. Because I reckon if I use the contrast dunes over it, and then did a dry brush of brass, it would look like. I forgot the name of the Silent King. I can't pronounce the Silent King's.
Zerak or something. It's like almost like Szechuan. It's written, and I find it really offensive that in my head I just go straight to Szechuan. I don't know why. I'm just obviously always hungry.
Yes. An absolutely delicious dynasty.
Yes.
I'm sort of thinking about redoing a bunch of them.
Because that kind of leans into your, I would say from seeing a lot of your miniatures, obviously on Twitter you post quite a bit, you tend to lean into the whole grimdark, Blanchesque kind of grubby look of everything looking horrendously grubby, but in like a good creative way. And
well, that's more like how to phrase this is like that might speak to my incompetence, but
it's a fine line, isn't it?
There is like basically, I look at my miniatures in front of me and I just sort of see what I'm trying. I normally, like, when painting an army, I'm trying to do something. Like, I've actually got a Space Marine chapter painted up, and when I was then, that was about three or four years ago, maybe. And I'd finally, okay, I'm going to paint some Tamaris, and I'm going to finally actually learn some edge highlight properly, because I've always hated edge highlighting.
I still do.
The whole project was, can I try to get a more clean look? And to be honest, they're probably the cleanest guys I've done, but it's still pretty dirty. And whilst the Night Haunts are the last thing I painted, the Night Haunts, the whole aim was 100%, how blanchy can I make it? You know,
it
can
works.
I make it really, you know, my natural messiness and my griminess, let's just cover it in goo.
Yeah.
So, like, there's definitely that. And, like, I'm actually heading back. I'm just at the moment painting more Marines. And then I'm going to go to Necron. But I think, as I sort of said, I'm going to try to mess up my Necron, because I love the idea. Because at the moment, they're pretty clean. And I really like the idea of them emerging broken from the ground, covered in grime and all that kind of stuff. So that's what I'm going to lean into.
Yeah. That's what screams to me. It's like when I do my Space Marines, even them, they look so tired and kind of worn out. And that's, to me, half the thing. The whole universe is set around that, really, isn't it? So it makes some sense.
Yeah.
And it's fun to get messy.
If there's only war, there's no time for war.
Exactly. If an army's paint cleaning up all their armour each time, you just have to think, are they really that busy? Probably not. So my second to last question is, do you have any hopes or goals for the kind of the partnership between Marvel and Games Workshop? Because obviously you've kind of sat in on that. What's your kind of hopes with that? Are you wanting to see this as being kind of like the start of a long lasting dynasty of these sorts of books, expanding further from that?
I hope so. Yeah, I won't be satisfied until there's 40,000 miniseries. In a real world, it's like I would love this to work, because it's like, as I was saying earlier, I'm trying to set this is a useful way to do a 40k comic at Marvel. And I've given advice to, like, I've written, like, big plan documents in terms of these are maybe books you might want to think about down the line. You know, so that element. And there's talking about creators to bring on and characters to, you know, that whole kind of thing. And ways to make, this is how I've always tried to do my work for hire comics is, I want to make each comic absolutely standalone as possible in terms of, you pick up a Marnius Calgo off the shelf, read them all and go, okay, that was a great story. But then, like, if you read another one, let's say they did another mini, there's enough sort of soft connections between the two, you go, oh right, these are happening in the same universe, and, you know, reward me, even though you don't have to. That's the kind of stuff I look for, as in the ways to make it feel bigger than the page. And that's what comics are really good at. And to be honest, that's one way that comics is kind of like how the 40K universe works. The 40K universe is really interesting. It's how modular it is. As in, you know, there's areas of 40K I don't know much about. You know what I mean?
And you like, want to know more about, right?
I mean, I don't know enough about the Tau, ever. Or the Jakari, you know, or I can't pronounce Jakari. Like those areas, I know the surface level. But I also know that one day I'll be able to pick up that book and go through it properly, as opposed to the areas I know quite a bit about. You know what I mean? And that's in the same way I hope the comics would work. As in, like, no matter how long they go, there's a kind of like a modular nature to them, but also a connectivity to them. And that's part of the magic to me. Because 40K is enormous.
Yes. It's so
I mean? Like, the universe is so big. There's a bit in, like, in the first, this is one of the bits we had to get in the first issue. There's a map of the universe at the present. Yes. And very specifically, it's like, we must show the whole universe, then do a tiny square over what the Ultramarines control. You know, to show that, okay, all the battles we're doing and all this, this is this small.
It's
this
a vast empire, but it's the tiny little corner at the bottom of the map.
Exactly. You know.
Which I think helps to give context as well, because sometimes having that map and you look at it and go, this means nothing, without there being the context of, well, this battle took place here, and this planet, until you start looking at those, it doesn't mean anything. And I think that's the strength that can be played to with these books.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like, comics are a visual medium, so, like, as opposed to novels, actually, I'm reading the Romance of the Three Kingdoms at the moment. Sorry, the Romance of the Three Kingdoms, like the Chinese classic. And I'm spending a lot of my time looking at the map at the front, because I need to, you know, why is it important they take this city? Well, okay, it's there. You know what I mean? And that's, comics can really very easily do the, this explains the context clearly. I mean, like, you sort of see that when I'm describing the Agri-world in the comic, Nova Fulium. I'm talking about why did they have Agri? So I'm talking about the nearby, like, Hive City. So in other words, we're talking about why this stuff is important in a very kind of low-level way in terms of what are the stakes here, I guess. So yeah, I agree. I think there's some really hopefully useful stuff people can do.
Yeah, well, it's very exciting. So the big question I had as well is, like, for most hobbyists, we tend to just go, right, something's on pre-order, 2 weeks' time, it turns up. How can they get this book?
Well, there's multiple. I mean, the main, it's basically released in single issues to begin with, and they come out monthly. The first one's out today. It should be available in your local comic shop. They normally have copies to the shelf. It's possible they might have sold out. If it sells out, they should be able to order you some more. There's a possibility, like, they'll sell out and have to do a second printing. But, like, that's basically, there's a site called the, if you Google Comic Book Finder or something like that, you can actually get a site will tell you where your nearest comic book shop is. It's also available to buy online, so you can buy a digital copy. Comixology is probably the best place to get it.
I did that this morning myself. I thought I'd read ahead.
A fine place, like, yeah. And so you just go and buy it there. And, you know, and when the mini's over, there will almost certainly be a collection of the whole thing together. So you can buy it all in one book, which is, I mean, just when I'm writing, I'm always I always want to make individual issues really cool, but also the book hold together as a story. Because, you know, you go back to Dickens, like, all of Dickens' stuff was originally published in chapters. So the idea of being able to make literature out of pieces is something which I really try to do. So they're the three main options. Oh, and when it's in a trade, it'll be available to buy from all your usual bookshops and online sellers, as well as comic shops.
Cool. I think I've actually run out of questions, which is a good sign that I've actually managed to not just mess them up. So have you got any shout-outs you want to do, Kieran, or anything like that, or...?
So my brain goes, have I any shout-outs?
Open-ended questions are dangerous.
Not like... If people want to hear more of my nonsense, what I'm going to do is, as soon as I finish this, I'm going to write my newsletter. I do a basically weekly or semi-weekly newsletter. It's a Substack. Kieran Gillen. My name is written here. KieranGillen.substack.com. You can sign up to that, and I will send you, like, weekly mails of my nonsense. I'm on Twitter at Kieran Gillen. Generally, enter Kieran Gillen into any search engine, you'll find me. Relevantly to Warhammer fans, I've got a comic called Die I Write, and Die is about games and fantasy, and it's like an adult comic about people losing themselves in fantasy and about middle-age horrors. And it sort of does touch, like, tangentially to the hobby, I guess. Just, I haven't done the Warhammer... eventually, I want to do a sort of Warhammer-inspired episode, because I was searching 1970s early... what's it called? Owlin... What's it called? The Owlin' Weasel? Sorry, Owlin' Weasel. That was the original
one just before White Dwarf, yeah.
Yeah. So I was sort of researching the 1970s scene, and there's something really with Neil and I about where Games Workshop came from. You know, it's like this really small
the
London
shop.
People
it's,
trying to...
It's terrifying when you look at it. It's very quaint and very 70s.
Exactly. It's like, you know, and it's a long period of time. It's like 45 years, basically, in terms of this is a lifetime. Yes. This is one of the things about, for me, is the history of this stuff interests me and how things change and grow, and it's really a lot of fun to be part of it. Look at that. Official smooth
there
ending.
There we go. So obviously, thank you to everyone that's joined us and kind of tuned in. There's quite a few of them in the chat. I haven't actually looked at the numbers. So
there wasn't any actual
questions really from the chat. There was, I think there was one early on that kind of a guy said that he was liked the way you went and used Cassio as a threat for Vader in your run. So
that was fun. That was actually that was Lucas' film suggestion. Nice. I don't know. I was talking about I wanted to have an officer who was like the military, sort of the more the technician side, and then they said Cassio could have survived. So in other words, they gave me an existing person who could have survived the Death Star, who could be of use.
That's nice.
And I ran with that, and it was a lot of fun. I've only just realised Tag is, of course, he in the Star Wars comics, he's kind of the guy who says, why build a Death Star? We could buy 10,000, Star Destroyers for that. and I've kind of realised, like, Hexamar in the Marnius comic is a little bit like that. As in, he's the guy who basically, he's a bit of a math hammer guy, Quintus Hexamar.
Made me laugh already so much this morning.
It's funny. Hexamar's a delight. He's very much like the... we can get a +1 to attack here. We should do that. Actually like that, but because if you think about it, like Tag is absolutely the guy who's gone, why would you spend 500 points on this model when you can buy, 500 Skaven slaves and send them to battle?
That's how I plan all my army lists. It's like, can I do it with Orc boys instead? And do I want to hurt my back for the rest of that day? The answer is normally no. So thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much.
It's been great. It's been nice to catch up, actually, because I don't think I've seen you since Thought Bubble last year or the year before, in fact. So because I've been a bit out of the comics scene, I've kind of stayed away.
It's like, honestly, hopefully whenever this is all over, it'll be lovely to see people again. It has been a lot.
Yes, it's been nice. And I look forward to reading the next issues. Is it out every month? Is it monthly, I believe?
Every month.
So
it's out every month. So I guess it'll be around this time. In November.
Fantastic. Cool. Well, thank you everyone for obviously tuning in and joining in. You guys in the podcast, I'll put in the show notes below links to Kieran's Twitter, his newsletter and everything as well. So if you want to check him out and kind of look into his other comics, which are really good stuff, actually. It's like, I don't like to sort of go off on one about how good stuff tends to be, especially if they're there, but I do enjoy Kieran's books. So some of his runs, like the Thor run he did a good few years ago, is a really nice one that I think they've taken a lot of inspiration for the film stuff from at times, but that's just my take on it. So
thank you.
There we go.
John, that means a lot.
It's cool. I don't say nice things unless I mean it, and that's why you shouldn't watch some of the streams where I'm talking about the 40K app. I can't be positive if it's not positive, but there we go. It's in the name, so there we go. But thank you for tuning in, guys, and we'll see you for Stream Street tomorrow. I believe Rob's back with... I don't think there's anything planned, but there'll be something. So.